Hare Krishna. So we are continuing our endless discussion of the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, His names, forms, qualities, pastimes, devotees. And in particular, we are discussing about Lord Ramachandra, whose appearance day we celebrated yesterday, Sri Ram Navami. Today we will read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is a most important book filled not only with the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but also the pastimes of Krishna and different incarnations of Krishna. And we in the Krishna consciousness movement are really followers of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and we see things following in his line. So Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is divided into three sections, which correspond to three different parts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life. The first section, Adi Lila, referred to the to Lord Chaitanya's the first 24 years when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resided in Navadvip. The Madhya Lila covers the period after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and was traveling throughout India, 6 years, and then the last 12 years are the Anti Lila, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was situated in Jagannath Puri. So we're reading today from Madhya Lila, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India. And he met a devotee of Lord Ramachandra. So this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Chapter 9, Lord Chaitanya's Travels to Holy Places. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Sri Advaita Prabhu. And all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Text 178. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived at southern Mathura from Kamakoshi, he met a Brahmin. The Brahmin who met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invited the Lord to his home. This Brahmin was a great devotee and an authority on Lord Sri Ramachandra. He was always detached from material activities. After bathing in the river Kritamala, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the Brahmin's house to take lunch. But he saw that the food was unprepared because the Brahmin had not cooked it. Seeing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear sir, please tell me why you have not cooked. It is already noon." The Brahmin replied, "My dear Lord, we are living in the forest. For the time being, we cannot get all the ingredients for cooking. When Lakshman brings all the vegetables, fruits, and roots from the forest, Sita will do the necessary cooking." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very satisfied to hear about the Brahmin's method of worship. So this method of worship was appropriate for the Brahmin because, as we read earlier, he was completely detached from material activities. There are two sides, material and spiritual. And as we become absorbed in spiritual activities, we become detached from material ones. And to the extent that we're absorbed in material thoughts, we cannot be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So it's an important principle in devotional service for us to have a sense of what our position is and act accordingly. If someone is materially engrossed and then sort of imitates the type of worship of the Brahmin, it would be something like sahajya, imagining things to be very cheap. But these things are not cheap at all. They're acquired at a cost, and the cost is on the one side eagerness to serve, and on the other side detachment from materialism. But in this situation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of the Brahmin's worship because he was fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord and his pastimes and completely detached from materialism. Finally, the Brahmin hastily made arrangements for cooking. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his lunch at about 3 o'clock. But the Brahmin, being very sorrowful, fasted. While the Brahmin was fasting, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "Why are you fasting? Why are you so unhappy? Why are you so worried?" The Brahmin replied, "I have no reason to live. I shall give up my life by entering either fire or water." My dear sir, Mother Sita is the mother of the universe and the supreme goddess of fortune. She has been touched by the demon Ravana, and I am troubled upon hearing this news. Sir, due to my unhappiness, I cannot continue living. Although my body is burning, my life is not leaving. It may happen that a devotee wishes to leave his body out of spiritual distress or even feelings of separation from the Lord. One example was Srila Sanatan Goswami. He had made a plan that during the Rath Yatra festival in Puri, he would give up his life under the wheels of the chariot. And attain Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the omniscient Supreme Personality of God, had understood his mind, and he chided Sanatana Goswami, and he said that if I could attain Krishna by giving up this body, I would give up hundreds and millions of bodies. But one cannot attain Krishna by that method. One can attain Krishna only by devotional service. So you should remain in your body and engage in devotional service. It was an elaborate discussion, but that was the conclusion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "Please do not think in this way any longer. You are a learned pundit. Why don't you consider the case? Sita Devi, the dearmost wife of the Supreme Lord Ramachandra, certainly has a spiritual form of bliss. No one can see her with material eyes, for no materialist has such power. To say nothing of touching Mother Sita, a person with material senses cannot even see her. When Ravana kidnapped her, he kidnapped only her material, illusory form. As soon as Ravana appeared before Sita, she disappeared. Just to cheat Ravana, she sent an illusory material form. Spiritual substance is never within the jurisdiction of the material conception. This is always the verdict of the Vedas and Puranas." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 2, 3, 9, and 12, I'll just read the translation. "Spirit is not within the jurisdiction of material eyes, words, or mind." Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13 states, "Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatuke sadi kalatradishu boma ijyati yatirtha buddhi salile nakarichij janeshvabhigeshu sa eva gokara." A human being who identifies his body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of his body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath, rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is considered to be like an ass or a cow. End quote. These are some Vedic statements about spiritual substance. Spiritual substance cannot be seen by the unintelligent because they do not have the eyes or the mentality to see the spirit soul. Consequently, they think that there is no such thing as spirit. But the followers of the Vedic injunctions take their information from Vedic statements, such as the verses from the Katha Upanishad and Srimad Bhagavatam quoted above. Now, here is a very instructive and essential point for us. And that is that, in a way, spirit can become matter, and matter can become spirit. This is the basic principle of devotional service, and particularly Yukta Vairagya. As Srila Prabhupada said when he was in Los Angeles, that what is the difference between the temple and the other houses in the neighborhood? The temple is made of bricks and stone, and the other houses are made of bricks and stone. The temple has electricity, plumbing, all the different amenities, and so do the houses in the neighborhood. So why do we call this temple, and why do we call those ordinary residences? And he said the difference is because here the center is Krishna. And there, you know, the center is different forms of sense gratification. So the temple is spiritual because everything in the temple is engaged in the service of the Lord. Even the physical body, when it's fully engaged in the service of the Lord, becomes spiritual. So when we engage in the service of the Lord, material things become spiritual. And to the contrary, if we want to use something that's spiritual, meant for the service of the Lord, which is really everything that exists, then it becomes material. And so Ravana, he wanted to kidnap Sita Devi to enjoy her, but he didn't get the real Sita Devi, the spiritual Sita, but he got the Maya Sita. Now, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was explaining the process of devotional service to Srila Rupa Goswami, he described the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of the creeper of devotion. And he instructed him that you should become a gardener, a mali, and plant that seed and water it by chanting and hearing about Krishna. And you should be careful to distinguish between the devotional creeper and unwanted creepers, or weeds. And he said that sometimes the weeds exactly resemble the devotional creeper. And if you're not careful, the water that's meant for the devotional creeper can be sucked up by the weeds. And the weeds become stronger, and the actual devotional creeper becomes weaker. So we have to be very vigilant. And because the weeds can so closely resemble the creeper, one may need to consult others and in confidence, Guhyam Akhyati Prichati, and, you know, is this a weed or is this devotional? I will share a sort of conversation I had with Vaisheshika Prabhu after the Gaur Purnima festival in Laguna Beach recently. And he was discussing the spiritual master accepting the sinful reactions of the disciples and how that can affect the spiritual master. And of course, generally, we think in terms of how it affects the spiritual master physically. And, you know, he asked what my experiences were. I shared my experiences and experiences of other God brothers. And he shared some of his talks with God brothers. He mentioned His Holiness Devamrita Swami. You know, do you feel these reactions? And Devamrita Swami said, oh yeah. And he said, sometimes something will come on you like out of nowhere, like some physical ailment just come out of nowhere. So Vaisheshika Prabhu was explaining how, apart from the physical reactions, there could also be mental reactions, in the sense that one could be bewildered. He gave the example of Maya, that, you know, that from those reactions, you know, one's mind could be influenced by Maya. And like he said, when Maya comes, she's not going to come carrying a big sign, I'm Maya. But she's going to come in some very subtle, disguised form, like a weed that resembles the creeper, or like the Maya Sita, and not the real Sita. So he was thinking, you know, how to protect himself. And he discussed with some God brothers, and one suggested, anyway, I'm not sure exactly what his authority was, but he said if you chant 64 rounds a day, you will, be protected. And so Vaisheshika said he increased his chanting, and, you know, when you chant well, like I've seen Vaisheshika chant, it works, you know, it really, you know, Cheto Darpano Marginam, it really cleanses the heart, and Vidya Vadu Jivanam, the life of transcendental knowledge and so on. So Yeah, so we have to be careful. We have to be careful because the weeds can very closely resemble the devotional kripa. And Sri Chaitanya further said that one should fence in the creeper to protect it from the mad elephant, Atimata. You can very carefully tend your garden and, you know, cultivate the garden. But if a maddened elephant comes in, it can just trample and uproot everything in no time at all. And so that Hatimata, that mad elephant, offense is against devotees, especially Vaishnava Parad. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you have to protect your garden by fencing it in. So what is the fencing? The fencing is the circle of pure devotees. If you stay within the circle of pure devotees, then there will be no chance for that mad elephant of offense to enter. It's by associating with non-devotees that one becomes encouraged to commit offenses. And those offenses can include offenses in the mind. Having doubts. Well, doubts in and of themselves are not so bad. I mean, doubt is also a function of the intelligence, but, sort of having a challenging or a cynical or skeptical attitude. And, offenses can be committed verbally by actually criticizing, blaspheming, and physically, by breaking the regulative principles. And so, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said you have to fence the creeper to protect it. And the fencing is the circle of pure devotees, to always stay in the circle of pure devotees. So we really depend on each other. We definitely cannot do anything on our own. There's another section in Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Chaitanya tree. And in the Chaitanya tree, Lord Chaitanya is both the gardener and the tree itself. And that tree produces the fruit of love of God. And Lord Chaitanya says, as described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that I am just one person. How many of these fruits can I distribute? I need many people to help me. And, Srila Prabhupada explains that in distributing Krishna consciousness, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt he needed help, and what to speak of us. So both to tend our own devotional creeper and ultimately taste the fruit of love of God, and to distribute the fruit of love of God, or the means to attain the fruit of love of God, we need each other. So we should, of course, we should respect every living entity, but especially devotees, especially our fellow devotees who are engaged in the service of Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We really have to maintain very congenial relationships. And, you know, Guhyam Akhiti Prichiti, have devotees in whom we can confide and who can give us good advice. Sympathetic, but neutral and beneficial. So, coming back to our Ramdas Vipra. Text 195. Vishvasakaraha tumi amara vachani punarapi kubhavana na kari hamani. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then assured the Brahman, have faith in my words and do not burden your mind any longer with this misconception. What was the misconception? This is sort of like an open book exam because of the, everything's right there. But what was the misconception? Yes, yes, that Ravana had touched Sita. Purport. This is the process of spiritual understanding. Achintya kaluye bhavana tams tartena yojayaya. One should not try to understand things beyond our material conception by argument and counter-argument. This is Mahajana Yena Gata Sapanta. We have to follow in the footsteps of great authorities coming down in the parampara system. If we approach a bona fide acharya and keep faith in his words, spiritual realization will be easy. Although the Brahman was fasting, he had faith in the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and accepted food. In this way, his life was saved. So faith, everything begins with faith, adoshraddha, and everything depends on faith. So he had faith in the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he accepted food. And in this way, his life was saved. After thus assuring the Brahman, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proceeded further into southern India, and so on. So while he was traveling in South India, Lord Chaitanya came to a temple in Rameshwaram, and there he discovered a scripture called the Kurma Purana. In his travels, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discovered many old manuscripts. He discovered the Brahma Samhita, and he also discovered the Kurma Purana. So text 200. There, among the Brahmins, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listened to the Kurma Purana, wherein is mentioned the chaste woman's narration. Who's the chaste woman? Sita Devi. Text 201. Srimati Sita Devi is the mother of the three worlds and the wife of Lord Ramachandra. Among chaste women, she is supreme, and she is the daughter of King Janak. When Ravana came to kidnap Mother Sita and she saw him, she took shelter of the fire god, Agni. The fire god covered the body of Mother Sita, and in this way she was protected from the hands of Ravana. Upon hearing from the Kurma Purana how Ravana had kidnapped a false form of Mother Sita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very satisfied. the fire god Agni took away the real Sita and brought her to the place of Parvati, goddess Durga. An illusory form of Mother Sita was then delivered to Ravana, and in this way, Ravana was cheated. After Ravana was killed by Lord Ramachandra, Sita Devi was brought before the fire and tested. When the illusory Sita was brought before the fire by Lord Ramachandra, the fire god made the illusory form disappear and delivered the real Sita to Lord Ramachandra. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this story, he was very pleased, and he remembered the words of Ramdas Vipra. Indeed, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these conclusive statements from the Kurma Purana, he felt great happiness. After asking the Brahmin's permission, he took possession of the manuscript leaves of the Kurma Purana. Since the Kurma Purana was very old, the manuscript was also very old. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took possession of the original leaves in order to have direct evidence. The text was copied onto new leaves in order that the Purana be replaced. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then returned to southern Mathura, Madurai, and delivered the original manuscript of the Kurma Purana to Ramdas Vipra. Sitaya radito vanis chayam sitam ajijanat tam jahara dasa griva sitavani puram gata pariksha samaye vanim chaye sita viveshasa vani sitam samaniya tat purushtad aninayat. When he was petitioned by Mother Sita, the fire god Agni brought forth an illusory form of Sita and Ravana, who has 10 heads, kidnapped the false Sita. The original Sita then went to the abode of the fire god. When Lord Ramachandra tested the body of Sita, it was the false illusory Sita that entered the fire. At that time, the fire god brought the original Sita from his abode and delivered her to Lord Ramachandra. Purport. These two verses are taken from the Kurma Purana. 2.13. Ramdas Vipra was very pleased to receive the original leaf manuscript of the Kurma Purana, and he immediately fell down before the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began to cry. After receiving the manuscript, the Brahmin, being very pleased, said, "Sir, you are Lord Ramachandra himself and have come in the dress of a sannyasi to give me audience. My dear sir, you have delivered me from a very unhappy condition. I request that you take your lunch at my place. Please accept this invitation. Due to my mental distress, I could not give you a very nice lunch the other day. Now, by good fortune, you have come again to my home." Saying this, the Brahmin happily cooked food, and a first-class dinner was offered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya, the Brahmin, he saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Lord Ramachandra himself. And that is true, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, and within Krishna all the different avatars of Krishna are included. But the Lord was so merciful that He relieved all of the Brahmin's distress, and the Brahmin wept in ecstatic love. And so we also want that mercy and we can get it. The Lord is very kind to his devotees. It's his most prominent characteristic, bhaktivatsal. He's kind to his devotees. And all we really have to do is approach him and give up our false egos. And the Lord will be only too happy to reciprocate and take away all of our miseries and fill us with transcendental happiness. So we've just focused on one element in the story of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, but it's a very, very important to understand our limitations, the limitations of our material intelligence and mind and senses, and not have too much faith in them, but to, like the Brahmin, put faith in the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the scriptures and the acharyas. Hare Krishna. So again, like last night, I'd like, of course, we we didn't even really complete last night's discussion. Maybe I will take up one point from last night, which was that that Sita Devi represents material opulence. She's the goddess of fortune. And you know, one, although Ramachandra and his army were not very well equipped compared to Ravana and his army, but still they worked to their best capacity and depended on the mercy of the Lord, and they were successful. And so there's that idea that if we just think of the Lord and try our best and depend on his mercy, and then we will be victorious. And there was some discussion of devotees, both ancient and contemporary, who by engaging in devotional service had become very opulent and prosperous. So one devotee, Chandrasekhar Acharya Das, he raised the question, well, you know, does that mean if we follow the process of devotional service, we'll become rich? And, you know, I made the point that, well, that's not, you may or may not. You know, Krishna's like a loving father who knows what's best for the child and will do what's ever best for the child. But the example we have is devotees, they didn't serve the Lord with a material purpose in mind, but by the grace of the Lord, they were blessed with material opulence. But it may also happen that someone with material motives does engage in devotional service. And in that case, also the Lord will deal with the devotee very intelligently in such a way that the devotee will forget his material desires and take full shelter of the Lord. So that's another possibility. We see that in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, and also many contemporary devotees as well. All right, so are there any questions or comments? Yes. Hare Krishna.
You had mentioned about committing offenses in the mind or mentally. I was just wondering, practically speaking, you know, like maybe before I chant my rounds or something, the mind is so out of control that for some weird reason I might think something envious about another devotee, you know, and I don't know where the thought came from. Should I, you know, beat my mind with shoes, apologize in my mind, or tell the devotee that I was thinking something envious about you and I apologize for that? So that was my question.
The mind can be our best friend or our worst enemy. And quite often if it's uncontrolled, it acts as our worst enemy. There are two general approaches to the mind. One is to neglect it, to ignore it, and pay it no heed and go on with Krishna consciousness. And the other is to reason with it, to good luck on that one, but still, like some of our acharyas have played me, you know, my dear mind, please hear my words, you know, fix your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Once one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that if every time I offended a devotee, I had to ask for forgiveness, you know, offer obeisances and beg for forgiveness, I'd be spending my whole day doing that. And Srila Prabhupada replied that in the morning, it's part of our morning program, early morning, to offer obeisances to the devotees. Let us offer our obeisances to the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, who are just like desire trees, who can fulfill the desires of everyone, and are full of compassion for the fallen souls. And Srila Prabhupada said, when we do that in the morning, that is our way of begging for their forgiveness for whatever offenses we might have committed in the previous 24 hours. So we should be in that mood to beg forgiveness, and we should also be willing to forgive. That's very important for us also, that we're willing to forgive. And then we can carry on with a clean heart. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. I was just thinking, in my case, I can think of one example of a situation where, you know, sometimes the creeper can be confused with a weed, is kind of what you're mentioning about sort of like utilizing one's intelligence in devotional service. Sometimes it can be very difficult to distinguish whether it's a favorable use of intelligence as opposed to an improper use of intelligence. I was just wondering if you could think of maybe some example or some way to illustrate how to distinguish between those things.
Well, the Chaitanya Charitamrita lists different weeds. I mean, in broad categories, the weeds are the desires for material enjoyment or impersonal liberation. And then there's puja, pratista, labdha, desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, So, yeah, we have to be introspective and check ourselves. You know, am I doing this for name and fame, or am I really doing it to please Krishna? And, you know, we can also see if we don't get recognition, does it bother us? You know, like we, yeah, so you know, it's like lust. They're different sitting, Bhagavad Gita says that they're different sitting places for lust. And lust can also sit in your intelligence and you know, bewilder your intelligence. So that's why, again, it's, we come back to the association of devotees and offenseless chanting of the holy name. That the combination of the two will keep you safe. And progressive.
So basically you could distinguish by checking your motivation. Is that?
Yeah. It's all about motivation. Yes.
Guruji, I did not understand how the Brahmana told that Lakshmana went to bring vegetables and he was not able to cook meal for Chaitanya Prabhu. And another, how long he was been in that state? That's a very miserable state, and he don't know the story of Ramayana before, or he came to know only at that situation, or he was in that state before Chaitanya Prabhu met him. He was in this state from a long time.
Well, he was imagining himself to be there in the forest with Lord Ramachandra and Sita Devi and Lakshman. That's a... it's a very elevated state. Sometimes we do that. We try to place ourselves in a situation within our minds that, well, usually, yeah, some situation. And he was doing that in relation to Sitaram and Lakshman. And so... yeah, but he could do that because he was completely detached from material activities. As far as how long he was in that state, we don't have information. You know, and in regards to your sort of challenge that, you know, that he didn't know this, you know. He's like an authority on Lord Ram, and he didn't know this. We really don't say. We may not realize how easy things have been made for us by Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Things that we take for granted are really very very esoteric and confidential. So I don't think that we can, like, you know, blame the Brahman for not having understood this subtle point before he got the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we hadn't gotten the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Srila Prabhupada, where would we be? What would we be thinking? So we shouldn't like feel like that we're superior because we know more, but we should always be humble and think that it's only by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our parampara and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we know anything or can do anything. And that's really the truth. So, yeah.
So much, Maharaj.
Yeah. I'm just going to elaborate a little on that point. It's a different situation. But Srila Prabhupada was in Mauritius, the island of Mauritius, and a newspaper editor came to meet him. And the newspaper editor, you know, asked in a sort of critical way, critical of Arjuna, that Arjuna heard the whole Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, and he said in his own words that he understood and accepted everything that Krishna said. So isn't it ludicrous? You know what ludicrous means? Like ridiculous. You know, isn't it ridiculous that Arjuna, after hearing the whole Bhagavad Gita and saying that he understood the Bhagavad Gita, when he received the news that his son Abhimanyu was killed, he lamented, you know, just like an ordinary person, and was ready to enter fire, you know, give up his body in fire. And Prabhupada said that your question is ridiculous. Because that's really the way Prabhupada, because like so many times Prabhupada would say fools and rascals, like even here, so many talks with Bhakti Srup Damodar Swami and, you know, about the scientists like fools and rascals and kicking their face with boots. But actually, that's basically what they say about us. Maybe not in those words, but that's what they say, that the devotees are, in effect, fools and rascals. Like there's a famous or notorious British biologist named Dawkins, and he wrote a book called The God Delusion. And recently one devotee sent me a little, it's like a 1 minute clip. There was like a debate between Dawkins and a Christian. It was on an Australian television program called Q&A, Questions and Answers, and there's a live audience. And so Dawkins, he's saying everything comes from nothing. And so he was like raising the question of how we define nothing. And so the people in the audience started to laugh. And he said, "Why is everyone laughing?" And then the Catholic bishop, you know, he sort of smiled and said, "Well, they're laughing because, you know, if nothing is nothing, then how do you give a definition of nothing?" And then everyone laughed more. So, anyway. So this, anyway, so this newspaper editor in Mauritius, so he was in that sort of, he was, although he was Hindu, but he was very influenced by communism. I think he'd spent time in Russia, and he was like influenced in that way. So he was saying, you know, isn't it ridiculous? And then Prabhupada said, your question is ridiculous. If someone actually has knowledge, they cannot act contrary to the knowledge. That's what that newspaper publisher was saying. And then Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita to get Arjuna to fight. He said, yes, when Arjuna received the news that his son had been killed, he lamented, although the Bhagavad Gita says you shouldn't lament. But Prabhupada said that's natural. Everyone will lament, you know, if they hear that. But he didn't act contrary to Krishna's instruction because he didn't give up his duty. He didn't leave the battlefield and say, I'm not going to fight. But he continued to do his duty. And he did fight, so he didn't actually act contrary to Krishna's instructions. So, are you catching the connection here? That, yeah. In other words, we should be humble. We should be humble. And, not think that we know better than these great devotees, or are in a position to judge them or critique them. Okay, yes.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. My question was about the creeper of devotion versus the weeds. Specifically, I want to say that if we have desires, material desires, my understanding is that somehow or other they need to be at rest. Because if I die with certain material desire being suppressed, I've got to come back, right? So my humble understanding is that like suppression of them like is not the solution. But I don't know what's the correct approach to get over those material desires.
Well, again, by, you know, offenseless chanting and hearing, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, the heart is cleansed, and that means that material desires are cleansed. We experience a higher taste. And we don't want those lower material desires to interfere with our higher experience of Krishna consciousness. And another way to get free from material desires is to suffer the consequences of having them. And of course, there's so many levels to the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, but there's one verse in the ninth canto. After Ravana kidnapped Sita, Lord Ramachandra was lamenting intensely, and you know, roaming the forest to find her. And the Bhagavatam itself says, you know, thus, you know, the Supreme Lord himself, by his own example, showed the fate, you know, of a man who's too attached to a woman, how he suffers. So, it's bound to happen. It's bound to happen. And sometimes Krishna, like we were discussing, he'll do what is necessary to help his devotee. Sometimes he'll create a situation where the devotee suffers. And But if we are more proactive, then and really follow the process, and on our own give up these material desires and attachments, then Krishna may not see the need to intervene. There was one little story. In the early days, after Srila Prabhupada returned to India, he had a young man in Delhi who was translating his books into Hindi. And the boy's father came to meet Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had a relationship with him, and he had a bad habit of smoking. So when he came to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada asked him, have you given up smoking? And, he looked down, and he said, no, Srila Prabhupada, can I get some special mercy? And Srila Prabhupada said, special mercy, yes. Yes, there is such a thing as special mercy. And then he quoted the verse, yasyaham anugrinami harishyeta danam shanai. And Krishna says that when I'm especially mercifully inclined to a devotee, the first installment of my special mercy is I take everything away from him. And then when he suffers doubly. He suffers because he's deprived of his wealth, and he suffers doubly because his friends and family reject him or neglect him. And in that condition, of detachment, forced detachment, in that condition, Krishna within the heart gives him the good intelligence to take shelter of devotees. So that I've elaborated a little, but what Srila Prabhupada told the man was simply that, yes, there is special mercy, and he quoted the verse, and he said, special mercy is Krishna will take everything away from you. So do you want special mercy? And the man said, no, Srila Prabhupada, no. I'll do it myself. I'll give it up myself. But somehow or other, but we should be surrendered. We should accept the mercy in whatever form it comes as mercy, and then move along, cooperate with the Lord's plan. His Holiness Indradumya Swami gave a nice example that before he became a devotee, some summer he worked as a lifeguard at the beach. And so they were explaining, like, if a man is drowning, how you save him. And so they told him you have to, like, sort of circle around behind the person and then, like, grab him from behind and, throw him on your shoulder and then carry him into shore. And he said the reason is because, like, if they see you coming, they'll, like, get excited and start flailing, and, like, they can actually, like, interfere with your effort to save them. So Indradumya Swami was saying it's like that. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. Someone's coming to save us and we're sort of unknowingly fighting it. So that's why sometimes you have to, like, sneak around from behind, to get them and save them. So we want to cooperate with our saviors. We don't want to fight with them. Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
Well, you brought this up now, and you brought it up last night about how we're all being punished in the material world and how Krishna is so kind, he's giving us what we need, either rewards or punishment. And then you were just explaining that further. But sometimes devotees feel that, you know, whatever the karma they have coming, even though it's lessened, that maybe it's interfering with their ability to do service that they'd like to do. And then they become discouraged that Krishna is like sending, maybe I deserve it, but he's sending me so much and now I'm having a hard time even doing the service that I want to do. So I think you answered already the mood that we should have, but that specific point when devotees feel that the reactions are preventing them from doing more service, how should they understand?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, ultimately, we have to be neutral to whatever happens. As Srila Prabhupada said, I mean, from your question, it sounds like you're talking about bad things happening.
Like reactions that devotee may not know if it's just reactions because they're not, because they're still materially attached, or if it's Krishna's mercy, that special mercy you were just discussing.
Well, what I was going to say is that both could be impediments, suffering and enjoyment. But, so if we're neutral, then we won't get carried away by either. If we're materially attached, we'll resist the suffering that comes our way and think it's an impediment, but we might not resist the happiness that comes our way and consider that an impediment. But it could be as much an impediment as the suffering. So, the Bhagavatam says, Tatenu kampam samikshamana, that we should patiently tolerate the reactions of our past activities and intensify our service to the Lord in whatever case it is. Now, it may be that we're getting some reaction by Krishna's mercy. Like Srila Prabhupada said that when a devotee surrenders to Krishna, Krishna takes charge of his sinful reactions or karmic reactions and releases them for the best interest of the devotee. So so like Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna tested me first by taking everything away, and then he tested me by giving me everything. So when we're suffering, we should think, what does Krishna want me to learn from this situation? You know, I've had it happen to me. I think every one of us has had it happen. You know, what am I meant to learn from this situation? And sometimes when we learn what we're meant to learn, then Krishna will take it away. But we might learn one thing, but it's continuing. Okay, what else am I supposed to learn? And still, what else am I supposed to learn? But then at a certain stage, I've had it happen with me, and I feel, okay, but I really want to do some service. You know, I really want to help devotees. I really want to help people. And then that becomes like a different prayer. My experience has been Krishna can reciprocate with that also. But it should be without, you know, it should really be genuine from within the heart. You know, I really, really want to serve the devotees, and I can't do it in this condition. And so then that prayer is okay. It's really one devotee was looking to buy a house, and he couldn't find the right house, or even if he found what he thought was the right house, then at the last minute someone would put in a higher bid, or it would come off the market, and it was just like going on and on and on. And I said, well, have you prayed? He said, no, how can I pray for a house? That's material. So I said, well, that's true. It could be material, and if that's your consciousness, then you shouldn't pray for it. But if you pray that, let me get this house. If I get this house, I'll have a nice place where I can host devotees, and I can have programs, and I can, serve my deities nicely. And so then that desire, it's the same thing. Material can become spiritual. Spiritual can become material. So when he saw it in that way, as a facility for service rather than as a facility for sense gratification, he could pray for it in good conscience. And then very soon, Krishna gave him a house. So it's the consciousness. It's the yukta vairagya. Anasaktasya vishayan, without attachment. That's the first condition. Anasaktasya vishayan, without attachment. Nirbande Krishna sambande. Using things in relation to Krishna. So, yeah, it's very, very subtle. Like Prabhupada, it's like being under a light. If you go a little to one side, it's like false renunciation. There's shadow. If you go a little to the other side, it's material enjoyment. That's also shadow. You have to be right under the light, then there's no shadow. And that's yukta vairagya, which is without personal attachment, using everything to serve Krishna. And so we have this beautiful temple. We have books. I mean, I wanted to say it to Suvas Prabhu. He was standing behind me during the kirtan after deity greeting, but then he left for a short while. So I'll say it now. That the standard of deity worship, at least what you see, is fantastic. I mean, it's like... Really, and even Srila Prabhupada, the aarti tray, everything was so shiny, and the ghee wicks were nicely formed, and the dish with the flowers, so many nice flowers, nicely arranged. And I was thinking, like, wow, what a high standard! Really, so nice. And I was also thinking, I hope we can maintain this through the generations. But it's just gorgeous, just amazing. So yeah, thank you all for maintaining such a wonderful standard. And I hope that everyone who's in a position to contribute to that standard and maintain that standard will do so in times to come. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shishi Rukmini Dwarkadish ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Hare Krishna.